Hi, Molly.
How are you doing, Sarah?
Good, good. I'm Sarah Posner. I'm senior editor at Religion Dispatches. And I'm here today to talk religion and politics with Molly Hemingway, who wears many hats, so I'll let her take that away.
I'm at Get Religion and also Ricochet and a few other places.
So Ricochet, what do you write about religion there too?
Not really, actually. It's a right of center conversation site. And it's libertarians, conservatives, Republicans in name only, talking about politics and pop culture and occasionally religion.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
As well, Get Religion, I read. Okay. So, well, let's get started. Let's get started talking about the Republican presidential race.
Woo-hoo.
With someone who has not yet declared himself officially a candidate, but appears to be doing something that would look like he's positioning himself to be a candidate, and that is Texas Governor Rick Perry, who is participating in a big stadium-sized prayer event in August in Houston, because who doesn't want to be in Houston in August? And
right. In a stadium.
And he's come under criticism from many different sides, including religious liberty-minded ministers in the Houston area, church-state separation groups, and others, for not just the partisan nature of the event, but the sort of Christian focus of the event, given that he is an elected official. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, I think there are a lot of different ways to look at it. So I think what troubles some people is not that Rick Perry, Texan, is participating in this event, but that he's kind of put the weight of his office behind it. I think, you know, he put out a call for a statewide day of prayer, which admittedly everyone does. I mean, this is a very common thing for most presidents and heads of state, actual states, to do. So there's that issue. So he's actually kind of, you know, made it into an official event. And then, yeah, as you point out, some people are upset that it's a mostly Christian event. But I think that that's not really the problem. I mean, from I'm Lutheran and we don't participate in these kinds of events because we have a very strong understanding of the role of the church and the role of the state. So we think that the job of the church is actually to pray for, you know, everything that's happening in the country. And in my church, in my congregation, we do this every single week. We do it every single day. If we're, you know, if we're gathered together, we pray for the president and the governor. This is not a partisan thing. We do it no matter who's in office. That's not really the job of the state to take over that role that the church has. And so it leads to a general confusion, but also it encourages a sort of established religion that can be, that can hurt people who don't believe in mingling different religious groups together. So already as Lutherans, we don't join together with, other Christians as confessional Lutheran, I should say. We don't join together with other Christians in worship services generally, because we think that kind of compromises our teaching and sends confusing messages. That problem is actually compounded when we include other religious groups in there too. And this is a, you know, very deeply held belief. It goes back to the Ten Commandments. And so the state sort of encouraging this watering down of doctrinal distinctions is already bad, but I don't think that making it more interfaith would in any way solve the problem for people like me, who are already completely marginalized by events like this.
That's interesting. Well, you know, I wrote a blog post the other day about the fact that the spokesperson for the event, you know, admitted to, I can't remember who the reporter was, it was on American Family Radio, actually, that the event was intended to bring people to Christ. So in other words, to convert people who weren't Christian to Christianity. And I wrote a blog post the other day from my perspective of covering these sorts of events as someone who's Jewish. But it's interesting what
right.
you say.
And that's like totally fine. I'm sure you think it's totally fine if people want to do that. It's when it gets mixed with the state that
right.
it becomes a problem.
Well, because, you know, the fact that Perry, there's a couple of layers of it. You know, and this is the sort of criticism that he's gotten from church-state separation groups. One is that he is currently the governor of Texas. And so,
which is 100% Christian, I believe. Is that right?
Well, I think the Texas Republican Party would like to be that way, but didn't they at one time have a plank in their platform that America is a Christian nation?
I don't know, but
I know that it was Texas.
I know a Hindu Republican in Texas, so I know that.
But in any case, So not only is he the governor of Texas and then should not, as an elected official, be endorsing a particular brand of religion, but also that he has made clear that he's strongly considering a run for president. And does this signal his injection of these sorts of issues and rhetoric into the presidential campaign? And I think that there's been a third criticism on top of those criticisms, which is that he's teaming up with some very extreme right-wing groups for this event, including the American Family Association, which has engaged in possibly some of the ugliest anti-gay and anti-Muslim rhetoric out there. And so, you know, you combine this with it being a Christian event, with the fact that he's doing it with an organization which has been vehemently anti-Muslim and also anti-gay, and is it, you know, is he using his platform to promote not just promote but validate this particular group? So I think he's getting criticism from a lot of different directions. Yours is sort of an interesting one because you don't really hear it that much.
But, I know, we're always left out of this discussion. I hate it. But actually, I mean, it happened all the time after September 11th when it was like if you weren't participating in these interfaith worship services, you were literally called unpatriotic. Bill O'Reilly called my people unchristian because we didn't do, you know, we didn't support the Oprah Winfrey, praise be unto her, you know, worship service that she led. It's
very. I didn't
very,
know Bill O'Reilly was a big Oprah fan.
You know, I didn't know Bill O'Reilly was a big theologian, but apparently, you know, he's a scholar in this career. But I'm just saying, it just shows you how you can be marginalized. These doctrinal distinctions can be marginalized, and it's not good for the health of those institutions. But I was actually going to say on that note, I kind of worry when we talk too much about religious groups and we scrutinize them too much. I think of how the media doesn't really do a good job of understanding nuance or whatnot when you look at how President Obama's home church was treated in the media. It was just more for spectacle as opposed to understanding. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we can really misunderstand the way people are talking about religious messages. And I think it's not a good idea if we overly scrutinize the religious associations of presidential nominees or candidates. We have to be very careful and really think about all these messages in context. I don't think there's a single religious group out there that could have their messages taken out of context and perverted and made to seem horrible. And you know, sometimes they are, but it's just important that we are careful and don't get too into, I think, the private religious lives of people. And on that note, that's one of...
But in Perry's case, he's made this a very public event. And
right,
so
but there was
people
also
aren't scrutinizing his private religious beliefs. People
but
are
they
scrutinizing
are the,
his
the,
public
the Houston,
event that he's participating in and endorsing.
The Houston Chronicle just wrote an unbelievable hit piece on Rick Perry's tithing practices.
Okay,
and
I
it was
see
like
that, so tell me about it.
Okay, so apparently he gave like you know $15,000 to his church or something last year, and they were like that was only 0.8% of his income, and the average is 1.2%, and the Bible commands 10%, and you know there's actually a lot of debate about whether the 10% tithe is the correct approach for the you know New Testament church and whatnot. I mean, they just kind of came down from on high with these like religious pronouncements, and I just think that we're kind of getting into dangerous territory when we're judging the private religious practice. Not that
but
giving
I think
money to a church
issue.
Is...
That's a different issue than talking about the prayer rally, which is called the response.
I completely agree. I agree. I'm just saying we need to be careful when we talk about religious associations and private views. But yes, public
right.
stuff, that's all.
And just to be clear, you know, so take, for example, the participation in the response by the American Family Association. So that has, you know, it's not Perry's church. It's an actual political organization that he's associating himself with, whose representatives have made really outlandish statements about LGBT people and American Muslims. So I think scrutinizing that falls in the category of we should definitely scrutinize that. And then on the other end of the spectrum is the sort of story that you're talking about. Although I didn't read it, although I wonder if there was some effort to, was it to show some sort of hypocrisy on his part? Because
yeah, I was supposed to say like, look, he wants you to pray, but he doesn't tithe the right amount. And it's, there's not, you know, that you can't take your own standards of tithing and say that they're universally held. And you also might not know everything about the way a person tithes or donates, you know, their goods to a church. It just seems a little dangerous. But also, I feel like that it also needs to be said, I don't know a lot about the American Family Association, but I do know that anytime any group supports traditional marriage laws and opposes, like, changing laws to include same-sex unions, they're always called anti-gay, you know, horrible this,
This is different. Okay,
so I know. I actually know a little, enough about them to know that it's different, but it just kind of goes back to what I'm saying about how we need to take the time to explain the full positions of people and.
Yeah, but I mean, when they have a representative who goes on the radio and says that, you know, the gay people are like Nazis, and the Nazis were gay, and the stormtroopers were gay, and that's where homosexuality comes from. I don't think that that's any kind of rational discussion about whether there should be, you know, we should legalize same-sex marriage. That's like off in the hinterlands of get
thingy. No, I don't disagree. I mean, yeah. I think it's totally
So anyway, so what do you think it says? I mean, I think that obviously we know that all of the GOP presidential candidates have talked about religion, probably less so Huntsman and Romney. But, you know, they're all, you know, have discussed their Christian beliefs publicly, some of them more overtly than others do. You know, Newt Gingrich has obviously been very public about his conversion to Catholicism. Michelle Bachmann is very public about her religious beliefs. Do you think that Perry is upping the ante a little bit with this? If he's thinking about jumping in the race, do you think he's upping the ante in terms of what's going to be expected of these candidates from the part of the base that wants to see that kind of religiosity in the campaign?
I think actually there are quite a few candidates who are comfortable talking about their faith, and that always seems to be the big dividing line, like the people who act really awkward and weird when they're talking about it, and people who can tell
those?
Just in...
Who do you think is awkward and weird?
Well, just like, you know, in times past, the way that, you know, maybe even like a John Kerry or something just didn't quite feel comfortable talking about his faith, which, you know, had something to do probably with his Catholicism, but also it was just clear that it wasn't like, you know, he didn't live... a religious life in the same way that some other Christians were. I mean,
he was in no way disparaging. It's just Catholic. He was a mass attending Catholic.
But
not everybody's comfortable talking about it publicly. And should that be a test?
Well, one of the great things that like Democrats did after the 2004 2004 election was they recognized that there was a problem with people. There'd been almost like a hostility in the way.
You thought it was a great thing, but I didn't.
Oh, sorry. Well, actually, I just mean good for them. I personally don't have any opinion on it, but it helped them get some seats in Congress that they wouldn't have otherwise gotten, because people like to talk. They like to vote for people who feel comfortable talking about their religious faith.
See, with the talking about religion and getting more seats in Congress. I mean, I think that there were so many other factors at play that I don't think you can pin it on that.
Well, there was at least a market. You know, there were a lot of people who sought out help in just being more comfortable talking about their faith. I think that it's my own personal view that you should not vote for someone based on their religious views. But reality is that people like to vote for candidates that they feel share similar religious views or being comfortable with talking about how religion affects their day to day life or whatnot.
See, I mean, what do you base that on? Because I'm not sure that that's true.
I think that people have shown that you want to vote for a candidate who understands you and who you like, and religious compatibility has a lot to do with that. But maybe also just the fact that every single person who runs for office expresses what their religious bona fides are, and it's almost impossible to get elected if you don't. You know, this is a really big problem for people, you know, for more skeptical candidates or people who don't.
Or Mormons. Part.
Yeah. Actually, this is far for me, like, the most fascinating thing with the whole thing is that John Huntsman is so clearly a Jack Mormon, but nobody quite knows how to just accept that. You know, everything he says is just like standard Jack Mormon, like, I grew up around these people, they're sort of culturally affiliated with the church, but they really aren't active members in any sense of the word. So they don't want to like throw off their affiliation, but neither are they embracing it. And it's just been funny to see how uncomfortable that has been for the media to write up.
But that to me is just so odd because, like, you know, what makes him any less Mormon than Romney? I mean, Mormonism is his, you know, religious, maybe you wouldn't characterize it as his religious heritage.
Well, I would say like more heritage, like, and who cares?
And
why
do we need to have it like, oh, are you a real Mormon? Are you just like with John Kerry? Are you a real Catholic? Or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of diversity among, say, let's just say Catholics as an example. There's a lot of diversity in terms of religious practice and
sure.
political views.
No, I find it to be totally irrational. I think yeah. I don't care if you are, you know, a Zoroastrian. All I really care about is what is your economic policy.
Right.
But other
as
people,
it should be.
Yeah, other people do. So I don't know. And I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised. I watched that debate, the Republican debate, and I was expecting, you know, I've already expressed my own personal sentiments on the importance of understanding the role of the church and the role of the state. And I was kind of expecting to be cringing through the entire thing. And when they talked about specifically, you know, the First Amendment and separationism, they seemed to handle that in a way that was much better than I expected they would. So it'll be
really
interesting to see how
I think, you know, so King asked them about that. And the only answer I actually remember is Ron Paul's. And he talked about it from this standpoint.
Okay.
Like it's to keep government out of religion as opposed to, you know, get government out of people's religion as opposed to.
Well, didn't he also say, like, the First Amendment is about Christians being able to practice their religion however they want?
Something like that.
But I knew enough about Ron Paul because, you know, he's of the libertarian wing and I'm of that persuasion too, to know that that's not, you know, he wasn't saying that the First Amendment is just for Christians. So, yes, but that is true. I mean,
he's also, you know, I would kind of put him more, not necessarily like the libertarian camp, but maybe this Constitution Party camp, and they are for being governed by biblical Christian principles.
Yeah, that's not Ron Paul at all. I mean, did you, the first debate when he made the moral defense of heroin legalization?
Yeah.
That was pretty much my favorite part of a debate of
yeah.
all times. But as he said, it was basically like your heroin is someone else's religion and people should be free to practice whatever they want so long as they're not hurting other people. So he's, you know, solid on that.
I don't know. I just find him a mystery on that, because if that's the case, then why, you know, does he go and speak at a Constitution Party event, but never take a position on saying, well, you know, I like what you guys stand for on X, Y, and Z, but I really can't get with your plank on the United States being governed by biblical principles, because I really do believe in religious freedom and that there are, you know, he doesn't say that. So that's why I kind of feel like he's a little bit of a mystery.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be able to solve the mystery of
maybe
Ron
not.
Paul here. In the...
But while we're talking about candidates talking about religion, and I guess that debate to me wasn't actually that interesting. There wasn't a lot happening in that CNN.
There wasn't. There wasn't a lot. But I was led to believe that it was going to be like a circus on a stage and there was going to be crazy stuff happening. And the fact that it was boring was actually kind of interesting to me.
Well, it was boring and it was also very free of policy discussion.
Oh,
and
it was free of a discussion on the economy. I mean, they did talk about the economy, but not enough. It was completely free of foreign policy, which is a huge issue for many Republican voters. And they didn't even like broach these topics like well past half, you know, they'd gone through half the debate before they even talked about it.
Right, and the whole,
it was,
you know,
ridiculous.
Coke or Pepsi, Conan or Leno, just really kind of, to me, just dumbed it all down to that kind of level. You know, I think that obviously we're going to hear religion talk from the Republican candidates, because that's the way it's been for however many election cycles. Since at least 1980. But, you know, you brought up the Republicans, I mean, I'm sorry, the Democrats and talking about religion. And also you brought up, you want to hear what the candidate's economic policy is. And there was a little standoff, shall we say, recently involving both religion and economic policy. And that was the confrontation between a representative of a liberal leaning group called Faithful America and Paul Ryan. And Faithful America is opposed to Paul Ryan's budget proposal. But they did not contest it on purely economic grounds. They contested on the grounds that Ryan, a practicing Catholic, has expressed admiration for the writer Ayn Rand, who was an atheist and an anti-religionist. And so this representative from Faithful America approached Ryan with a copy of the Bible and, you know, got it on video and put it on YouTube and all the rest, and saying to him, you know, here, would you like this Bible? It has the passages on the poor underlined.
Aw, snap.
I didn't, no. Did you really think so?
No,
I didn't think so either. And, you know, Ryan refused the Bible and said, you know, I've got plenty of Bibles at home. Thank you very much. And got in his car and drove away.
As part of a larger campaign, you know, there's a petition and there's a video and whatnot. I don't really get what the point is, other than to make it seem like conservative Christians are opposing this budget, which I think is maybe the, like, subtext of what they're trying to
give the impression that conservative Christians are opposed to the budget.
Well, I mean, I just noticed that. For instance, like Media Bistro thought it came from a conservative Christian group who was opposing the budget, just because they always think of religious people as on the right, and they don't realize that there are religious people across the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. But what I thought was really bizarre about it is this idea that we can only take ideas from people if they share our religious views, and it just doesn't stand. Like, one of the common criticisms that caught fire last year was that the right had all this epistemic closure and they only listened to people that agreed with them and whatnot. And Ayn Rand, I mean, when I read Ayn Rand when I was 15 and I totally dug it, which is to my, you know, shame probably, my dad kind of pointed out to me that she had some good ideas and she also had some ideas that were in conflict with our religious views. And yeah, I got that. I mean, I like to read people who I don't agree with religiously, and I like to take ideas from them. And I don't think it makes sense that we would criticize people. Like, a pro-choice female atheist should not be listened to because she's an atheist. It's like, no, I mean, she can have good ideas, and people can actually think she does a great job with a moral defense of individualism and, you know, against collectivism without agreeing with everything she says. You don't need to, you know, be Christian to agree with what Martin Luther King Jr. says about civil rights. And that's just a bizarre claim to make.
Well,
to me.
Here was what I thought about it. I thought the fact that there are so many people in the religious right and even some in the Republican Party who like to talk about how secular humanists have ruined our country because they took prayer out of schools and get it in a whole litany of things, right? And so on the one hand, they blame secular humanists for all of the country's ills, but then on the other hand are happy to embrace someone who was an atheist and anti-religion. And I do think that that is hypocritical, but I don't think I thought that the stunt with the Bible really wasn't about that. The stunt with the Bible was to say, we're the ones who really understand what the Bible says, not you, Paul Ryan, because you're the jerk who follows Ayn Rand. And so we are really the ones who understand what Jesus taught. And I don't think that we should be debating our budget based on that.
Like, I'm all for Christians talking amongst themselves about what Scripture has to say about the role of government. I think that's totally legitimate. But
absolutely. But I just don't think we should be having a discussion, a public policy discussion about it.
The other thing that I thought was really odd about the whole thing is that, of course, like, I don't mean this in any way disparaging, but these are all Soros-backed groups. Like, these are groups that are largely financed by Soros, who's a very generous person who does fund religious groups. He's expressed, even though he's an atheist, he says he has no problem funding religious groups.
Wait, who's funded by Soros?
Like Faithful America. Well, I mean, they got like $400,000 grants a couple years ago, which is, you know, that's not minor change. I mean, I don't know if they continued to get those. I just was reading about the 2008 grants, which were almost $1 million. Now that
I don't know anything about that. But
he's
in any case,
clear, but my point is just that they don't have a problem listening to an atheist and having, you know, and following his lead on particular things, as they shouldn't. So it's just the hypocrisy of leveling that charge against someone else bothers me. It's
I didn't know whether you were going down the other kind of George Soros path.
It's just, and I don't think there's any hypocrisy in Soros himself funding atheists or funding religious groups. He's expressed why he does this. It's basically like he does not personally believe, but he thinks it's, you know, that other people do and they're motivated this way. And that's why he, you know, funds these groups. It makes total sense. But it was just the particulars of this case where there, you know, these groups would have no problem following the lead of an atheist, but then they criticize other people who do. just doesn't
Well,
make sense.
The other thing that sort of struck me about all of this was that there were a couple things. One was that there was a coalition of religious groups who came and spoke at a press conference that took place at the same time as Ralph Reed's Faith and Freedom Coalition conference, which was where the attempt to give Paul Ryan the Bible happened. And one of the people who spoke at this counter press conference was Jim Wallace, who very recently had, you know, a confrontation of his own with other Christians who believed that his organization's refusal to run this Believe Out Loud ad, which was about welcoming LGBT people at church, was not biblical, right? So, like, once you start saying, this person isn't acting in a biblical way, you know, there are people who are going to say that, you know, you're not acting in a biblical way. So it's sort of like, you know, who's the one who gets to say, you know, I'm the biblical one.
Right.
The other thing was that I do think that notwithstanding some people in the Republican Party and conservative movement's admiration for Rand and some of her ideas, which, you know, I don't agree with, I do think that there is a strain of thought within the conservative movement, particularly within the religious conservative movement, that would support, I'm not rationalizing it, I'm just saying that it's out there, that would support cutting all these government programs as Paul Ryan proposes in his budget, plan, because they believe that the government has a very limited role because God made the federal government to be have this very limited role and the church and the family should take care of the rest.
Right.
So I think that if the aim of the Faithful America people was to say to other Christians, hey, you know, the Republican budget proposal is actually based on an atheist's ideas, it wouldn't actually fly very much with them because I think that they have another religious justification for it, if that makes sense.
I think that's actually an important point. And one of the things that is so fascinating about this Ayn Rand debate is that there is also this contingent of conservatives that say the most unbelievably horrible things about her. Not that, I mean, maybe she deserves them, I don't know, but the funniest thing is that there have even been attempts to tie her to Satanism, which, if you know anything about her objectivist philosophy, is not really going to, you know, it's not going to convince many people, but Catherine Mangu Ward over at Reason had a nice little summary of all the people calling Ayn Rand a Satanist, which is not something, you know, that's probably a more prevalent idea among the Christian right than
right.
that.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I think that was that was possibly one of the aims of the Faithful America and also the American Values Network, which is another group that is running an ad, I think, in Wisconsin or Michigan, or probably in Wisconsin, against in Ryan's district, pointing out that Rand was an atheist. And it makes me wonder whether they're trying to tap into this sort of perhaps on-the-fence Christians who maybe are supporting Ryan's budget. But I can't imagine that if you support it in idea, that you're going to be dissuaded from it merely because Ayn Rand was an atheist.
Right. It almost says more about what these other people think about conservatives than anything about conservatives themselves.
Well, I actually think it says a lot about what they think about atheists.
Right. Actually, I know all these atheists. I mean, of all the atheists I know, because they're mostly libertarian, they were all for the budget. So it was like a totally misguided attempt.
Yeah, but I think that also, I think there are a lot of atheists out there who are liberal. And would be completely opposed to the Ryan budget on other grounds than religion, just because they think that government should play this role in providing a social safety net that Ryan's budget would eviscerate. So
And if we want people to discuss these rationally and not emotionally, like appealing to the worst bigotry that we have is probably not a good way to go.
Right. So what else do you think? Last week, this big new survey on millennial attitudes towards same-sex marriage and abortion came out from Public Religion Research Institute, which showed really a very significant rise in support for same-sex marriage among millennials being 18 to 29-year-olds, and suggesting strongly that this was not going to be a potent campaign issue for candidates in the future as it was perhaps in the past because of these shifting attitudes. And it also showed that, you know, in terms of attitudes towards abortion, the only group that as a religious group, that as a religious group is a, has a majority opposed to legal abortion are white evangelicals. So I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it in any detail.
I did.
But the suggestion was that, you know, the tying together of the same-sex marriage and abortion issues is not going to have the same potency that it did, say, perhaps in 2000 or 2004. And
I think what was most – I mean, I read through all the questions, and one of the things I thought was really interesting was that far and away the issue that, the young people thought was most important was the economy.
Right.
Like, they were interested in these other social issues, but just nowhere near. I mean, it was like 80% thought that was.
Right, because if you're graduating from college, you want to make sure you have a job.
Totally screwed, right. So I think that we have to think of this whole issue in context of how the economy is really going to sort of drive this next election. And I think, you know, you saw this already that Republicans who don't really want to shy away from any social issues debates, even they want to focus on the economy just because, you know, it's such a, like, you know, existential threat in their minds. So I think that that has to be kept in mind. But also, this survey was showing dramatically different results than almost all the other surveys out there on millennial attitudes about abortion. So I think maybe more study is needed. You know, the Gallup and Pew and General Social Survey or whatever it's called, they've been showing young people are much more likely to identify as pro-life and have reservations about abortion. And this survey showed like some seriously conflicted views among young people. And I don't know if it was a survey problem or if it was just a weird day or something. But, you know, like you would have the same percentage of people saying that a woman should be free to do whatever she wants with her pregnancy at any point in time in her pregnancy, as we're saying, you know, law should be around to help protect the life of an unborn child. So it was just lots of mixed messages.
Well, I think, you know, one of the odd data points was that something, there was an 8% gap between millennials who said that abortion should be legal. It was, now I'm not remembering the number, but then 8% more than that said that abortion should be available in the local community, that, that there should be doctors who provide abortion in the local community. So there were 8%, there was this 8% chunk that thought that it should be illegal, but that that provide, it should be provided in the local community, which didn't make any sense to me.
I kind of found the whole survey interesting. I mean, I think it's probably should be mentioned that it was funded by the Ford Foundation, which is one of the most pro-abortion rights foundations in America, if not the most. And it was staffed by former Planned Parenthood general counsel or whatnot. I mean, it's a...
You're talking about Rachel Laser?
Yeah. Right, she worked for Planned Parenthood of Greater Washington, general counsel. I literally just read the survey, and that's what it said. Something about her work as general counsel for various abortion rights groups. She's also known,
but she's also
as participating
in
Third
Way.
For
the Third Way, Come Let Us Reason Together, which argued for not debating legality or illegality.
I'm just saying this is not like a Gallup poll necessarily. But one of the things I thought was interesting. Well, like, if I'm just saying it's interesting to look at the way the questions were asked, and I think that maybe this is an issue with all surveys, but as I was reading through them, it was like, do you care about women? Do you care about women in need? Do you think abortion should be available in the local community? You know, it was just kind of like clear there was some leading going on. I don't remember what the exact questions were, but I think that also contributed to people being sort of all over the map when they were answering these questions. Like, there was a section that was clearly designed to make people think about ultrasound technology as opposed to those teen mama shows. You know, like, there were questions like about how seeing an ultrasound has affected your views on abortion, and then it like went right into what about
I think they were trying to determine these different factors that were impacting what people thought about abortion, and one of them was the availability of ultrasound. The other one was the prevalence of, that there are these TV shows, which I've never seen, so I feel a little silly talking about them. But I guess that there are these shows on MTV and other cable shows that depict teen mothers, but I've never seen them.
But it was not
to sort of ferret out some of these outside right. influences that were having an impact on what people thought about abortion. So, but I think that overall, I think a lot of surveys are very difficult to compare on abortion attitudes because of the different way that the questions ask. Like Gallup asks the question in a different way than Pew does, yes. in a different way from somebody yes. else does. So I think that the outcome is very, can be mixed because of the different phrasing of the questions. So, and because
I mean, I think that's what the whole point of this survey was.
If we don't have that across the board where Gallup and Pew and everybody else asks the question in exactly the same way.
Right, but I think that's
just because I think there are people who are going to answer a question differently if they're asked, are you pro-life or pro-choice? Or do you think that abortion should be legal in all or some cases or all in most cases? You know, like there are all these different permutations of the way the question's asked.
Right. I just think that's why people should know that this poll is designed with a, public relations in mind. It's designed to help with messaging for people who, might not be advocating
pro-life. I don't think
policies.
So, because I think it was criticized by reproductive rights groups. So,
I don't know.
I think that...
I like PRRI's polls, if I got that right. I think they're interesting. I just think that you have to, you have to look at the questions, the methodology, and what's going on there.
Well, that's true of all polls, obviously. But I think that,
trust anyone.
It's not a fair suggestion to say that they were carrying water for the reproductive rights movement, because I think that there were a lot of people at the presentation of the poll results that at Brookings last week. Who were there from reproductive rights organizations who took issue not with the survey methodology necessarily, but with the way the data was sort of framed and presented. Hmm. So this is the way it came out because they're carrying water for reproductive rights.
Yeah, I think they're like a trustworthy group and all that. I've used their surveys before. That you have to look at how the questions were asked too. So, on that note, did you see the question where, like, a majority of people were saying they thought that gay sex was immoral or something?
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me. A majority said they thought it was immoral, but I thought that women...
And then, like, a majority were saying they thought there should be parental notification laws.
That was surprising to me. That seemed very high.
Right. Anyway.
Like I said, these questions can be asked in a multitude of ways, and so I think that comparing different... polling results is
yes.
difficult.
You have to look at all the polls and balance one off the other. Yes.
But so, we somehow got off on a tangent. But
okay,
what I really wanted to talk about with regard to that was how much did you think? So we talked about the presidential candidates talking about faith itself, but and in the past, same-sex marriage and abortion have been talked about in the context of religion in political campaigns. Do you think in the 2012 campaign, the candidates are going to talk about those issues and sort of hype those issues? Or are there other issues you think that they will talk about to sort of get this religion, to get the religion talk in there? So I'm talking about stuff beyond like, I'm a Christian and I go to church and things right. that they talk about to bring religion into the conversation. Like,
I don't know.
Israel
I think
policy or something like that.
Religious groups are certainly involved in the fight on, marriage laws, but I think that the arguments themselves aren't terribly religious. The most religious aspect of it is about religious freedom, and there are some tensions there between, changing marriage laws and how it might affect religious organizations. So I think they'll probably focus all of it on that type of thing because people get very nervous about, how it might affect their freedom of religion or the freedom of religious organizations to operate in the manner that they wish.
But do you think it'll be something that presidential candidates will bring up, either in the primary or in the general election?
I think it'll be something the media really likes to talk about. Like, I thought the most interesting thing about that Republican debate was that it gave good insight into what the media thinks about the Republicans, which could be summed up as, boy, those folks are weird. They have weird ideas about stuff. So I think the media likes to focus on these issues. And so I think that they will of course be an issue. And there are certainly enough reasons to talk about it right now with the Prop 8 decision and, what's happening in New York or what'll be happening next year. But I still think that, it's going to be the kind of thing where probably the Democratic, party will probably be more interested in talking about it because they sense they have a comparative advantage with certain groups, particularly their base, and they need to motivate their base, while Republicans will probably want to talk all about the economy because it's in the crapper.
Well, I mean, do you think that Democrats would bring it up in a way that they'd come out and support same-sex marriage? As a campaign issue? That seems...
I don't know.
That seems risky. I mean, not risky to me, but it seems like something that Democrats would think is risky.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'll really depend. I mean, at the presidential level, I really don't know. I mean, I think President Obama has decided this is a good way to get his base more energized. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays that up without demoralizing the other parts of his party that are not so excited about that part of his agenda.
What do you think?
I mean, I don't know. You're really good at this stuff. So what do you think?
I think that Obama hasn't made it an issue at all. In fact, he's backed away from it as an issue.
Do you mean same-sex marriage in particular?
But there are all sorts of attendant issues, don't ask, don't tell. I don't think he's willing to take others.
I mean, what about the not defending the actual law of the land?
DOMA.
DOMA. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he recently had this anti-bullying initiative and so forth. And so he does certain things. And they, you know, obviously during his administration, they repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But I think that he, at one point earlier in his career, he favored same-sex marriage and now he does not. Although I doubt very much he would make it a campaign issue. I mean, it just sort of seems like the sort of thing that there's no... In his mind, there would be no win for him to make it a campaign issue.
What do you think will happen with just like the religious issue in general with him? You know, I mean, last time we had all of the Jeremiah Wright stuff, and now there's no real, congregation to pin all of the media's ire on. Do you think that's going to cause a problem that he's not a member of a congregation, or do you think the media will be respectful of the constraints placed on a president when it comes to his worship life?
First of all, I don't think that presidents have to have a congregation. I can totally understand Obama feeling reluctant to join one, not only from the perspective of himself and the scrutiny that it would bring to him, but the scrutiny that it would bring to the minister and the other members of the church. You know, it seems like it would be a burden.
Many presidents before him have come to the same conclusion, too. I mean, it's
and
not
they didn't go through
in
the
way
Jeremiah Wright scrutiny, and they haven't gone through the, sort of bogus charges that he's Muslim or he's not a real Christian and all of this stuff, right?
Right.
So,
But that's what I remember when he, in Easter week, he came out with this, like, unbelievably clear confession of his Christian faith that barely got any media coverage, but then, like, later that week, he didn't have the right Easter proclamation or something. So all these media outlets were like, he didn't proclaim Easter or whatever.
Well, all these media outlets being, you know, right-wing media outlets brought it
actually,
up. And then some people, you know,
right-wing
activists
brought it up. Fox News had
then,
a fair story on it, I think. Fox News actually was pretty, like, straightforward about exactly what was going on there. But, yes, still people freaked out about it. And I'm just wondering if we're going to see a lot of that kind of
I'm sure unfairness. We're going to see a lot of freaking out about him not being a real Christian or a genuine Christian or a good enough Christian or a real Christian. I mean,
see,
I think that
this is maybe the big Rick Perry threat because like all the other Republican candidates or most of the others, like they don't even want to get into these kinds of issues, but there might be a candidate or two who actually wants to engage this and will do it subtly.
I think
and
Bachman would want to get into it. I think
possibly.
That Palin, if she gets in the race, would want to get into it. I'm trying to think. I mean, you know, they've all, if not questioned the president's faith, they've all, you know, gone to events where speakers are questioning the president's faith or do radio interviews with radio hosts who question the president's faith. So, you know, one of them could easily put the whole thing to rest by saying, I believe President Obama is a Christian. And that he was
I'm
born in
sure
America, and that's
that.
The end of it.
I
think it'll be interesting to see, though, so that's kind of like the not rational end of things. On the rational end of things, it'll be interesting to see exactly what Obama does in terms of what he was encouraged to do in 2008, which was try to appeal to more moderate, middle-of-the-road evangelicals and Catholics and try to peel those voters away from the Republican Party. I don't know whether the way to do that is to back away from your previous stance on reproductive rights and LGBT rights, or whether the right way to do that is to focus on, like you say, on the economy, which people, regardless of their religious beliefs, are going to want to hear some, I hope, good policy discussion on that.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe it'll just be an all economy presidential campaign. We'll see.
So, well, just on a final note, do you think that same-sex marriage is going to pass in New York? Should we try to take predictions?
I don't know. I mean, one of the things I think is really interesting is that there's always the, like, media primary where everyone in the media thinks it's, like, absolutely insane that it's even up for debate. But then whenever it's actually kind of coming down to a vote, it's the chances of something passing are much sketchier. New York is contrary to what people think. You know, it only change divorce laws like 2 years ago or something.
Is that right? I grew up in New York.
You used to not be able to get a no-fault divorce until seriously like just a couple years ago. So I think the legislature can be, which there are probably many reasons why that was the case, but I don't know. I mean, I've been hearing completely opposing things from both sides. I would not even.
Well, the New York Times this morning reported on a Republican switching sides and being for it. So therefore being one vote away from passage. So
yeah. So I know that everyone's facing unbelievable pressure on this. So it'll just be interesting to see if the same-sex marriage side has enough power to convince that last person, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, it was good talking to you.
Wonderful talking to you, and I hope you have a really great rest of your week.
Thanks, Molly.
Okay. Bye.